When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Screen Talk. I'm Eric Cohn.
I'm Ann Thompson.
And we were hoping to talk about CinemaCon this week, but since we weren't in Las Vegas, we decided that it was important to find somebody from our team who could actually give us a perspective of what it was like on the ground. Unfortunately, our business reporter, Brian Welk, is here bright and early back from Caesar's Palace in one piece. I hope you didn't lose all your money on the slot machines, Brian.
Oh no, just the half life savings, but all good.
Well, just like the theatrical business. It's appropriate exactly. When talking about the state of exhibition.
You look rosy cheeked and healthy. I mean, that's the thing about being in Las Vegas. It's like you're breathing this horrible air and you never go outside and, you know, you enter this sort of strange multiverse, if you like, of the studios and their presentations. And I just wondered if you could go through, I know this is asking a lot, but, you know, you watched every single studio make a presentation, show footage, and you know from the reactions of the crowd there, the 4,000 or so exhibitors that were assembled there, how many fit into the Coliseum itself? Do you remember the, it's a lot.
Oh, I mean, it's huge. I mean, I don't know the number, but I'd have to look that up. But, you know, I talked to someone who was like, an executive who was their first CinemaCon, and I was like, you know, Adele performs there. That's she's like, oh my god, like what am I gonna do? But you, I mean, you're absolutely right that you see every single studio's presentation, and by Thursday you're looking back and you're thinking, what did I see Monday with Sony? Or I've seen so many trailers, so many different presentations and executives and celebrities coming through. It all starts to blur together, but there were definitely some highlights and that stood out for each.
Go for it.
Yeah, Sony kicked things off. And we had mentioned that, you know, last year, Sony felt like a really good place to kick things off because they were, you know, doing a victory lap with Spider-Man. They didn't have a streaming service. And this year, their pitch was really like, well, we have a lot of movies that we're pushing out. We have, I think they said 23 different movies, which is a lot compared to some of the other studios. Yeah. They do have a good mix of the big studio IP and also the smaller films, the more original things. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse still looked really strong. They showed an extended sequence, and it's still not all done. They showed us some in-progress footage, but I was really impressed by what I saw from that. I think it's going to be just as good as the original. And then, you know, there were some other fun things. I was excited to see Gran Turismo and finally get a look at what that is as a fan of the games from way back when. And then we also got Jennifer Lawrence and No Hard Feelings. That looked pretty funny. Got some big laughs in the room on the first night. But yeah, they really showed a diverse slate, even if not the most movie star packed. And, you know, they have a lot to compete with in terms of the IP and all that. So, but then, of course, they also had Napoleon, Ridley Scott's film with Apple. And with that, we didn't get a trailer. We got a single scene of a battle sequence. And it's impressive. It was dark. It was very, very intense, very booming sort of sequence. But
did you see Joaquin Phoenix?
Yeah, you see him a little bit. He's not doing big acting. It was really a more showcase for just the visuals and the scope of it. You know, it's this whole thing on the frozen battlefield, and Napoleon is, you know, sending these Russian soldiers to their watery deaths and icy frozen tundra.
Wow.
Yeah, so
I love that Ridley Scott into his mid-80s is like doing stuff like this and going straight into like a Gladiator sequel. Like, No scaling back for that guy in old age. But, you know, so this was one of two Apple movies paired with a studio, and they both sound like pretty big screen experiences because the other is Killers of the Flower Moon. So I'm curious, and you saw a good amount of that too, right?
Well, with that, we saw a trailer, yes, and that was part of Paramount's presentation. And of course, Marty Scorsese was there to accept an award, the first Legend of Cinema award from CinemaCon, which they are now
very prestigious.
a new thing that they're doing, and I guess we'll be
a way to get people to show up.
Yes, and in fact, this was a surprise. Leonardo DiCaprio ended up interviewing him, although it wasn't much of a interview or a conversation, because Marty just, you know, he goes and we'll talk about, you know, French New Wave and for, you know, hours if you let him. So, but it's still very amusing to see him and a lot of fun. But I will say with Killers, we've heard all the reports about the film's length and just how long it's been taking to get this movie to screen because of just its enormous cost. But I will say that what we saw, the footage, the trailer, I mean, it looks commercial, if anything. It does look like a, you know, it looks like Wolf of Wall Street in the early 1900s or turn of the century. It's
with that tone?
I mean, right. It's when you describe it as like this, you know, serial killer FBI sort of thing, but he's talking about, you know, early on you have Leo and he's getting berated by Robert De Niro about, you know, the hunt for black gold and we need to steal the oil. But there's a lot of, I think, classic Scorsese hallmarks, and whether or not the actual film plays like that, I you know, have my doubts, but it did look very commercial to me in a lot of different ways. And I was very impressed by what I saw from that.
So he's worked with both of these actors many times over many years, but this is the first time they've worked together, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's a potent combo. Like, it's interesting thinking back on how last year's CinemaCon, which I know you were at, like the big story was Top Gun Maverick. And I was trying to discern, you know, I know we could talk about The Flash and all the enthusiasm that's coming out of that, but it was interesting that everybody seemed to be trying to have that movie this year. You know, maybe it's Killers, maybe it's Flash, maybe it's Napoleon. Every day it felt like somebody was trying to have that big movie.
So Warner's was the big Flash moment.
Yeah, and I mean, I will say to your point, Eric, that I think some studios, you know, we reveal the trailer. I think this year there was also not as much that went online immediately after the fact, which is
right.
A little different.
Frustrating.
It is for a little frustrating because you're playing guessing games and just trying to describe what you're seeing of these short 2-minute trailers. And, you know, in the other way, it's like, you know, we saw the Hunger Games trailer and then that dropped online immediately after. So it was like, was it really that much different that we needed to be there for that in person? Oh, and I will say, you know, you mentioned just a quick aside, with Leo and De Niro, I think the story will be Lily Gladstone. They were really talking her up, and just a little bit of the footage that we saw from her looks like she's going to have a huge part in it. So anyway, you're right. I think, you know, how do you, you know, there's a lot of movies being shown, and how do you really have the one that stands out and that really speaks to the crowd? And some of the filmmakers, some of the studios did that with really bringing out a ton, every star that they could, and putting on a big show to go along with their movie trailer. And others showed just bigger clips. We got 20 minutes of the new Mission Impossible, which was phenomenal. We got 20 minutes of Elemental, which I enjoyed.
Paramount and Disney.
Warmly. Right. Yes. Right. We got, you know, a longer look at Barbie. We got a big sizzle for a very unfinished Wicked, which closed out Universal's presentation, and that looked really impressive, better than I could have imagined already. All the rendering that they're doing with these worlds, and an incredible stat that they explained that despite all the CGI that went into that film, they planted 9 million tulips to create the the world around the Emerald City and at one of their sets, and I thought that sounded phenomenal.
It's a good selling point. A lot of people have been bringing up Barbie to me. I was sort of curious, like, what the target audience is there. I guess, I mean, we don't know what it's rated yet, but it seems like a sort of like a PG-13 skewing older more than like younger kids who might like Barbie, which I don't even know if younger kids do. I mean, my daughter doesn't have a Barbie doll yet, that's for sure.
Yes, I don't think
it's a little young, Eric. Give her time.
I don't know what the right age is.
I never had Barbie. I was a Tammy girl.
Do kids even have them? I guess some do.
Oh, I'm sure. It does look a little more mature for that real kids crowd, especially given this new trailer. Which had this new trailer gave a deeper sense of the plot that we see. Early on, you saw that shot where Margot Robbie is coming out of the out of her heels, and she's still, you know, like this, just kind of perched. Well, the whole narrative of the movie is that one day she gets out of the shower and her heel comes flat, and suddenly she starts thinking about all these existential questions. Including, like, have you ever thought about death before? Which was
wow.
And then finds herself talking with weird Barbie, played by Kate McKinnon, which was another just phenomenal little moment. And then they make their way to the real world and get arrested promptly. So I think with Barbie, they nailed it. I mean, we could have been talking about this and how just, I don't know, lame it could have been, or just how it's a childish movie that
juvenile. Yeah,
it felt like it could go either way. It could be too rarefied even.
Right.
There is a chance of that, but the thing that it reminds me of in a way is like the Lego movie, that we have a thing that no one is going to really expect. But what it's going to be, but a movie that combines that art and commerce in a better way than you can imagine, and it just looks incredibly funny. And I think the visual design of the Barbie world and everything they put into it really, really speaks and could lend to a bunch of different craft stories down the line. I'm really excited to see it. I think everyone I talk to talk that film up. It's definitely a highlight.
Was your reaction to The Flash?
Yeah, that's what they really want us to be talking about, right? Because you got the full yes. deal there.
Full movie. Well, first of all, I'm not allowed to review it. You know, that's the review embargo is way down the line.
But there were tweets out there that were really, felt like review tweets, that's for sure.
Yes, and let me give the normal caveat of, this is a festival crowd, and the press that is going to be tweeting about this movie is going to gush and go crazy.
Right.
It's very fanboy heavy, this crowd.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I was cynical. And I was skeptical of that reaction because of that.
I mean, it's not, you know, it's also not Comic-Con, and it's also not Tan or something, you know, so it's definitely, it's in the middle ground. The people who are seeing this are CinemaCon, you know, goers or their executives. And I mean, we talked to some of those folks and all of them still really like The Flash as well.
But even the press, the people on Twitter who are writing all of those reviews, they're coming from the kind of fanboy websites.
Yes.
That covers CinemaCon. Well, along with the trades.
And the kind of prevailing sentiment that we were getting was best superhero movie or one of the greatest superhero movies really project. I mean, when I look at what this movie is, it feels like it's, you know, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse or something to that effect. It's got the multiverse component to it, but also that they think it's good enough that they're pushing past the whole Ezra Miller of it all.
Well, they sure do. Well, but the trailer really was superb. They did drop the trailer, but you saw the whole thing.
That's true. The trailer dropped with it. So we saw a lot of Michael Keaton in there and so forth.
Yeah.
So
Ben Affleck, the two Batmans.
Ben Affleck. Yep. Yeah.
And there's a lot of them and of Supergirl that really play into this. I mean, this is like in some ways it embodies maybe more of what you wanted from a Justice League film or from some of these other crossover movies. And I think unlike Spider, not Spider-Verse, but unlike No Way Home, what this movie does is it brings in some of these legacy characters, but even tweaks the formula for some of those original films and finds new approaches to them. And I think it's a lot of fun. I think it does a really great job of marrying the tones. It's funny. It's irreverent. It has some more, you know, somber moments and just thoughtful sort of storytelling. It is just a lot of fun. And ultimately, when we got to the end and the couple of reveals there, which I definitely won't spoil here, people were losing their mind in our press section. They were going nuts. And I think it's going to have that sort of reaction. They have won some of the cameo wars here. Like when you talk about these superhero movies that do these different cameos, they really nailed it. And, do I think it's the best superhero movie of all time? I don't, you know, with all due respect to Peter Safran, who I got to see again at this event. No, but it is probably better than any of the other Snyderverse era DC movies. It is probably better than any of the recent Marvel movies post Endgame.
So it's all about context. It's a real sliding scale when you get down to that.
You're not going to compare it to Christopher Nolan's Batman movies.
No, I mean it's a different tone entirely, but it's not as serious as those films. It's not as serious as even the Snyder films. It just finds a good middle ground between really slick action and really good humor. And I think the Machetes, they, like they did with It, they have these incredible set pieces that just really stand out. And I had a lot of fun with it.
You know, it's interesting because someone pointed out recently that it's like, it's been 5 years since Infinity War, which was such a massive achievement for this kind of storytelling in terms of how it brought all these storytelling threads together. Here, it sounds like you're seeing even more story. You're talking about different eras of franchises being brought together. I'm curious about, especially because we're now on the brink of the James Gunn era DC, how much you see this movie as sort of setting up whatever seems to be around the corner.
That I don't really want to get into too much. I mean, I would
vaguely
say, yeah. No, I mean,
because it predates James Gunn, so it's a fascinating challenge in that sense.
I think just the idea, there was some confusion that there were some lines that Safran and Gunn said about how it might kind of tee up the future and whatever. But that, I think that was a little misleading. Like no one is gonna come out of this I will say, we also did not see a post-credit sequence. The movie did not even have credits, period. It's unfinished, although it's finished. There's probably some mixing that needs to be done, maybe some other you know VFX tune-ups or something, but it is we did not even see a final credits for the film. So I don't know if they will end up adding a post-credit sequence.
How did Zaslav present himself? I mean,
as an addendum to Ant Squad, I just want to point out, you know, they put that post-credit sequence in for a Superman movie that never happened, and on Black Adam, because of David Zaslav having a meeting with The Rock. So maybe they learned their lesson there.
Yeah.
But yeah. I'd be curious.
I want to be very, careful about any sort of, but to Zaslav, I mean, he gave actually a very rousing speech for, you know, we hear a lot of the executives. And I think one of the things about CinemaCon is you hear similar narratives kind of throughout the weekend from all the different exhibitors and the NATO people who are talking up how cinema is back and the value of movie theaters. And we start to buy into the narrative of the, you know, theaters as marketing, or that narrative that these streaming movies that turn into theatrical plays have now done better, and all the streamers get this now, except Netflix, but all of them get it. And you hear it a lot. It starts to wear on you a little bit, but with Zaslav, he was very, I found him very earnest in his dedication to what he's talking about, and I didn't think that he was putting on a show in the same way.
Or maybe he was putting on such a good show that you ended up thinking he wasn't.
So he was convincing as being earnest. That's a good thing.
No, I was
he likable? I guess I'm asking, you know, they come out, he's a new guy on the scene in terms of how the exhibitors respond to him.
Yeah, I mean, he also went to the Turner Classic Movies Festival a few weeks ago and sat on this panel with like Spielberg and all
these. I saw him. I reported on it. Right.
Yeah, yeah. And so clearly there is an effort there to keep these different.
He presented well there.
I'm pulling up my quote that, you know, some of the notes we took, and he said, you know, we believe in full windowing of motion pictures. We do not want to do direct to streaming movies, and we're in no rush to bring the movie to Max. He said Max is a great service, but, you know, he again talked about the fact that once they go into theaters, they perform substantially better. And I think that was as clear of a way that he could have said it than probably any of the other executives who were there, who still, you know, put on a good show about theatrical.
I loved Rothman's quote about how, because we're just reading all of your coverage from afar, you know, we're gleaning everything we can. His quote was that you can't get a movie star without a movie in theaters, that movie theaters make movie stars, not streaming services.
It's funny too, because, you know, I mean, yeah, he said that, exactly what you said, that, you know, I hope other people believe that is what he said. I hope they believe that shit, that I don't know if I could swear on this podcast.
You're saying
we don't need movie stars. And because it sounds like Sony very much believes in still movie stars. And there were a lot of movie stars on the stages of the Coliseum. Unless it was Disney, which only had Melissa McCarthy there, they didn't have any other executives.
They often don't. Disney doesn't feel the need, you know. They often don't. But who got the biggest reaction besides? I mean, Leo was in the other room, which was too bad.
Yes,
you know, he wasn't in the Coliseum. But who got the biggest reaction?
Ryan Gosling, the couple times he was there, was very funny. Got a lot of laughs. Seth Rogen had a really good line at Chris Aaronson's expense.
TMNT.
I love Chris Aaronson. He's a showman.
He did a very funny thing.
He's the Paramount distribution executive, and he always puts on a show at CinemaCon.
Yes, and he this year came up out of a manhole cover for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and Seth Rogen said that wouldn't be the first time I've seen a studio executive crawl out of the sewer.
I'm sure he didn't prepare that in advance at all.
Yeah. Who else?
Rihanna. What about Rihanna?
Yeah, Smurfette. Rihanna there for 90 seconds but got a huge standing ovation or huge applause. People were very excited to see her. I think that came as a surprise. And Will Ferrell brought out a dog for his movie. The dog got a lot of attention, you know, and Will Ferrell was excellent doing his shtick of
which
kind of the old.
Which movie is he in?
Film called Strays for Universal, and it's an R-rated dog movie where, you know, the dog that Will Ferrell voices has been abandoned, and he now wants to get back to his owner so he can bite off his dick. And
you know what? Yeah,
the trailer for this movie is hilarious.
Maybe the most commercial.
Well, among R-rated comedies, that's certainly been a while since we've seen one really perform commercially. So it is interesting seeing all this range of
stuff. There were a few kind of R-rated comedies. That was a little bit of a narrative that I was hearing that maybe the R-rated comedy is back, or they're trying at least. So we'll see about that. But how well something like this or No Hard Feelings actually performs.
I'm rooting for them. I'm rooting for the mid-level movies that the studios have to release if they're going to go back to a bigger footprint. I'm just curious to see how many of them actually perform. That's the
life beyond tent poles.
And the other the other question that came up, I loved the idea that Scorsese made a case for independence in theaters. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
we didn't hear about any other real art house.
Independence
kind of
didn't exist at this at this convention.
That is true. Like, we even had Neon do a presentation last year, and the only real indie presence we got was Focus as part of Uni's presentation. Focus did show trailers for The Holdovers and for Ethan Coen's new film, Drive Away Dolls. and also the trailer for Asteroid City. But you're right. Otherwise, we didn't get that many indie films. And Scorsese just basically said that we want to see, if you can, try and get more mid-sized movies, not even indie movies that have been labeled as such, but, you know, the smaller films that might inspire the next generation and be the people that, you know, maybe one or two of them do go on to make the next big blockbuster because they saw a smaller film that inspired them and made them think about movies, and that you know, will be an investment in the long-term future and health of the theatrical exhibition
Mark.
Business.
Good for Mark.
Yeah. I hope someone carries that
one. They didn't show, they did not show the Jonathan Majors movie.
No. Green.
Instead, we got Next Goal Wins, which that was another one that we've been
Hearing about it for so long. That was on two Sundance wish lists for IndieWire.
There's a reason.
Well, let's hope it's
Michael
good.
I think Michael Fassbender, who I adore, don't get me wrong, I love him, but he's never been anchored a hit in his life.
I mean, I wouldn't say it was the highlight of the weekend. I thought it was interesting, but, you know, again, this came as part of a Disney presentation that, you know, just leaned on its trailers itself. It wasn't like, you know, Taika or Fassbender were there to hype those movies up, which in some ways is, you know, a relief because, you know, Disney kept their presentations short and they were able to, you know, get us in and out, and, you know, weren't like listening to a very long rambling Vin Diesel going off script or something like that. So
any references to the Ron DeSantis of it all, or
no,
is that another universe?
No.
Kind of intel did you pick up from the exhibitors themselves and just on the street? You know,
one of the things I did talk with an exhibitor about was, you know, I asked the question about Apple and Amazon, and I was asking people, you know, how serious do you think they are? We had a separate press conference with John Fithian that, and in his outgoing year, in which, you know, I asked directly about Apple and Amazon, and I think he was a little annoyed by my question. But
that's good.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately this, you know, because he referenced Apple and Amazon in his keynote address as being here and as like committed, and we've announced these dedication to movies. But he flashed up both of the Bloomberg headlines and cited them. And I'm like, well, that's not an announcement. They have not announced anything. And they're not here with their own presentations, putting their own dog and pony show on. So what have you actually heard from them in that regard? And he said they were in other conversations they've had. They've been consistent, or at least on Amazon's front. He pointed to an interview that Jen Salke did with the New York Times, and he thought that what she said there was consistent with some of the conversations they've had. And he did believe in what Apple was doing. And I did talk to some other, to your earlier point, I talked to some other exhibitors who had said actually that they had more positivity about both of them than even what's really been out there. And that's all he would really give me on that front. But that did give me some hope that we will see more movies, and that the window that we're talking about with these is healthy. But that's the clarity we don't have right now. You know, we hear $1 billion in an anonymous report, but we haven't heard that directly from Amazon or from Apple. And we don't know if that means, hey, we've got 12 movies this year that we're putting into theaters. And we don't know if that means that's 30-day windows before they end up on the thing. We don't know if they're doing day and dates. We don't know. All we know is,
well, Amazon, Apple movies. We do know that Amazon has Sue Kroll, right, who used to be head of marketing at Warner Brothers, and so they do plan to do wide releases like Air. And
well, especially that since it seems to have worked. I mean,
as a marketing launch,
and they slipped in an announcement just as the Flash was about to begin, that they had merged Amazon and MGM's distribution teams, and that they appointed someone new. Forgive me, I don't know his name, but replacing the late Eric Lomas, who got a lot of attention. But you know, Eric, as it was noted to me by several people, was, you know, an evangelist for getting Air into theaters, was the person who was instrumental in helping Creed do as well as it did at the box office. So you wonder how things could change in his absence. But now they have combined these two teams. So there's maybe not going to be, well, MGM is releasing this one and Amazon is releasing one. It's all the same thing.
And but the other one, Apple, is more like partnering with other distributors as opposed to doing it themselves. So that's different. You know?
Yeah, they're like renting a studio, and what we don't know is, you know, unless they eventually buy a studio, which they very much could, you know, if they do what Amazon did and buying MGM, they're going to need a partner, and even they're not going to have the ability to do a wide release, you know, worldwide platform, unless they partner with one of these studios. And that is going to be interesting to see. Are they going to, you know, stick with one spot? Are they going to do more? It'll be interesting.
And will they actually partner with someone?
Or will they say, well, for this one, we're doing it with Warner Brothers, and for this one, we're doing it with, you know, another with Paramount.
The Apple playbook.
The numbers. They're probably still crunching. I mean, they can afford to do whatever they want. Yeah.
You just see how combustible this business is and how subject to the whims of the market. You know, next year at Caesar's Palace, there's really no telling what that presentation will look like. That you just laid out so many
different,
if there even be, things change so quickly.
And who the Brian of NATO will be. Well, thanks for coming.
Get some rest. Try not to think about movie theaters for a few days. You know, play some video games or something.
Yeah, you were really helpful. Thank you. I've learned. I feel better informed.
And thank you so much for having me, and look forward to doing this again.
So speaking of big movies and their prospects in movie theaters, we got a chance to see the one that's right around the corner with Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. And it was really fascinating, and talking to Brian about Flash, because of James Gunn is now going into this DC mode, but he's also sunsetting his time with Marvel with Guardians. So that has now been put to bed. I guess we don't have to spoil this movie to talk, but we could talk about whether or not we liked it.
We can do an overview. I mean, the James Gunn story itself, which is chronicled at great length in a really good story in The Hollywood Reporter, which I recommend, is so interesting. The idea that he got fired off of this movie because of old, you know, tweets from way back when, apologized, but Alan Horn got rid of him anyway. And then he regretted it later. And everybody apparently behind the scenes, the whole cast,
They all backed him.
And they really got his job back.
But not before he went off and made the Suicide Squad. Basically auditioned for
the DC universe. So I think it's a wonderful comeback story. And you can see that this has that feeling of love, you know, that the whole group is grateful to be there, that they love each other, that they're giving it their all. And it has that Marvel feeling that was missing, I think, from the last Ant-Man movie. This one feels fully realized. It feels every detail is thought out and it looks good.
I mean, the thing is, it's because there's a certain template that was established for these movies, and it's consistent with that world. You know, he built a world within the MCU essentially from a property that wasn't super popular. So the first one, you know, almost was like being able to create original IP from scratch, and that helps in situations like this. I can't say I was bowled over by this movie. I kind of felt like it was all over the place. and a
it
little
has
underwritten.
Sections. It has definite sections.
A two-and-a-half-hour movie's got a lot of different sections to it, but not a lot of high stakes, I didn't think. I mean,
well,
yes,
Rocket.
Rocket
is
more centralized.
And
okay.
You get Rocket's origin story, which is actually very effective. I think it's the most effective thing in the movie.
It's cute. It's
and
cute,
it was moving.
But it's a lot.
I was crying.
And I was not that. I don't know. I mean, I felt a bit like I knew where it was heading so early on.
So we can give them the plot, which is basically that Rocket has been shot, you know, wounded, and there's some complicated things about his inner wiring that make it
they have to save him
for them to save him in the usual instant way. They all regenerate very easily and very simply.
And what that highlights also is this is sort of like a self-contained narrative. There aren't like big Marvel storylines going on here, as far as I can tell. I didn't see
they're all trying
really
to save Rocket.
Yeah, no references to Avengers.
And we get Rocket's backstory. But there's also the subplot of the return of Gamora and her love affair, you know, whether she is going to be a love interest again.
Right. Yeah, I like the way that was resolved. I gotta tell you, though, I mean, this whole thing with the needle drops and the James Gunn approach of, like, this is, like, so much rock music, I liked it originally, and I found it so grating now.
It's a little heavy-handed this time.
And a lot of times they don't really make sense. I'm like, why are we listening to Bruce Springsteen right now? Or I was really annoyed by the use of
that. Was over the closing credits. I love the fact that when you go to a Marvel movie, you have an entire theater full of jaded, you know, press people sitting through all the credits. Because they know there'll be something.
I felt like I was being held hostage, and I was like,
I know. It wasn't
working
either. It wasn't anything significant.
No, well, it tells
you
something, but we won't
skip the end if you want.
No. It does. It tells you something that sets up something, but it's not a scene. The scene itself doesn't set something up. You're just given some information that could be relevant to the future of some characters.
Maybe.
But I agree. I mean, it's just. I don't know. I mean, are people still invested in these movies the way that they were 5 years ago when Infinity War came out and established such a massive sort of, you know, there was that cliffhanger and the future of the whole universe was in balance. I feel like, you know, we always know there's another multiverse you can hop to. Things are never totally over. You can recast people or, you know, reboot things. And
well, they kind of move a few of the characters around and at the end and introduce new ones. So Will Poulter has joined the group.
Yeah,
he's pretty effective.
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, I enjoyed the kind of silliness of it all per usual, but I also felt
pretty
a little
amazing
tired by it.
Action sequences. I mean, there's this one sequence in a sort of spaceship cylinder where.
But how many of these movies have we seen where like a giant?
The way it was shot was really good. It was.
I know, but how many times have we seen a giant burning thing fall from the sky as the climax of one of these movies? I mean, I can tell. It's fun to watch. It's like a ride. There's nothing particularly notable to me about how that goes down.
I would say that this one scene, if you have, what's the standard? What's the gold standard right now for action sequences? It's John Wick. John Wick is the standard.
Sure. Yeah.
Very few people at this stage of the game, and very few movies are going to be able to compete with that level of execution. And this one scene takes it to another level, which is pretty damn good.
Well, the thing about John Wick's a really fascinating comparison is that it has, you know, edginess to it. It can be fast and almost uncomfortable and like viscerally intense.
And it stays on some level. It stays within the real world.
Yeah. But the Marvel movies can only go so far. I mean, it was actually shocking with the whole Thanos situation that they went to a certain kind of darkness that maybe some of the younger viewers couldn't go. But there is something a little cozier about Marvel movies that's supposed to make them more accessible to other audiences.
But, you know, Chris Pratt doesn't necessarily get the girl, you know, I mean, there's other stuff going on. Rocket doesn't necessarily survive. You know, we have to see, you know.
Yeah, we're not going to spoil anything. I will say that certainly trying to explain things to, say, like a 12 or 13 year old who might have certain expectations is kind of an interesting challenge. I just I don't know. I'm so.
This is going to be huge, Eric.
I'm sure
it's going to be successful.
I'm sure it will be successful.
This will bring back the Marvel world.
Do you really? I mean, because it doesn't set up the stakes of the MCU in the sense that, you know,
it's separate from the other ones.
So if you, when you say that it reconstitutes the Marvel world or whatever,
a hit, I mean, is my point. They need the energy that comes with a movie that reaches and connects with audiences right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, all the franchises do. I mean, it was interesting.
But Marvel had been so successful for so long, and now it has been on a slow curve.
Exactly. It goes back to that sliding scale. You know, it's all relative. Relative to Ant-Man, obviously, this one is decent. But anyway, I guess we'll see how it does this next week. And, you know, what kind of staying power is it going to have? There's not a ton of competition for a while on that level.
I am not worried about Guardians of the Universe.
So that'll hang around. And then James Gunn can go off on his DC adventure. So we'll see how the next 10 years do for him. Anyway, well, Anne, this was fun. Nice to get another voice on here to bring us up to speed on.
Maybe
CinemaCon.
I'll actually get back to CinemaCon next year.
Yeah, sure. If you think you can hold on to your savings. But anyway, rest
easy.
I know you've got a good weekend ahead of you, and I'll see you next week.
Okay. Bye, Eric.
Bye.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.